The Epstein files, the villainous Epstein files, which seem to be a problem for everybody politically, except for the people who have nothing to hide. They're the ones who have been most enthusiastic about having these things released for quite a long time. Although we do have to bear into mind, there are some political motivations, and some who may be eager to have them released do have some political motivations. More on that in a second. But the heart of this, though, is an exposure of what these files contain. For many, many years, people have been hiding behind these files. There's been lawsuits. There's been class action suits, which cost a lot of money to a certain individuals or companies, but that they always kept everything private. That may have helped some people financially, but it was always a horrible, I think you can just call it a double wicked crime against the victims of these perpetrators, the young women's. So that's one of the drivers that has been led to why so many people in the United States, not just Republicans or Democrats, or not for political reasons, not even those who were directly associated with it, but just regular Americans, this exploiting underage women for the use of mostly rich and debaucherous men is just heinous to most Americans. And they've said, no more hiding behind this. We want these files released. Now, you may recall, and this is going to come up here in a minute, many of the Democrats have had to control these files for a long time. Actually, so has the Republican, the Trump administration before, and the Biden administration. Nothing was ever done. No one ever released any of the files. A lot of people were asking for it at the time, but nobody wanted to let it go. Most people were thinking, well, that's because you don't want people to find out, because there's probably very many powerful people on here. There's maybe business leaders, members of Congress, key members of both parties politically, etc. We don't want anybody hiding behind it. So in the 2024 election, the Republicans ran on an emphatic desire to have these files released. Don't hold them back anymore. And you had Kash Patel, you had Pam Bondi, you had Dan Bongino just emphatically saying, as soon as we get in there, if we win, we're going to let these files go. And you recall, just real quick, Pam Bondi famously, less than a month into office, went on Fox News and said, I have the client list on my desk. I'm reviewing it right now. And she was asked by the Fox anchor, wow, is this going to be released? And she goes, I'm looking at them right now. They're on my desk. And as soon as we have something, we're going to figure it out. That's where all of this started. And now here we are. We're at the day of the voting. Possibly even by the time we're while we're on the air here, these may come out and that vote may take place. We'll see what that's going to do to how that's going to have an impact on what actually happens here. It's not quite as simple as one vote and all of a sudden the files are out there. We'll explain that in a minute. Before this vote happened and earlier today, we had, though, Mike Johnson, who has been dragging his feet to release these. He has been given excuse after excuse why he's not going to do it. Well, now that his hand has been forced because of this discharge petition, and now Trump, because they could not get the four Republicans to recant and to say they wouldn't sign it, now then President Trump realized he has no choice. And so then he just says, you know what, release them all. And now then you have basically an avalanche. And it's very possible you could get a unanimous vote to include every Republican, every Democrat voting yes to have these files released. Now, that still didn't make Mike Johnson very happy. So earlier this morning, before this vote took place, he went to pains to try to tell the American people, this is all the Democrats' fault.
The biggest proponents of this discharge petition were never actually interested in transparency or ensuring justice or protecting victims of this unspeakable tragedy, the Epstein evils. And how do we know that? Because the Democrats had every one of the Epstein files in their possession for the four long years of the Biden administration. The Biden Department of Justice had the files the entire time. And not a single one of the people who are so loud and animated right now, they never said anything about it for all those 4 years.
Okay, fair enough. All 4 years of the Biden administration, those files were in there. Nobody ever did anything about it. Nobody was clamoring on the Democratic side to have them released. That's a fair point. Why not? Why were you guys trying to hide these? What did you not want to come out? Legitimate questions. I want answers to that as well. Most Republicans do too. That's why they were clamoring for it. However, they were also there during the previous administration. they never came out either. No one was clamoring for it then either. And one has to try to remember, who was it that was, oh yeah, it was the Trump administration before. So if you're going to go down that path, you have to go down both paths. Why did neither one of the administrations talk about it before? And if you want to demonize the Democrats, then you also have to demonize the previous Trump administration. And if you're not going to say anything about Trump, then you also can't say anything about the Democrats either. Whatever the reasons were, I think that it's pretty clear that people in power and both sides have an incentive not to have these come out because they don't want people to know who was involved, which, of course, I want to know everybody. I don't want anybody left off of this, nor do most Americans for that matter. He also, you know, this Democrat lets in. Mike Johnson is so good at this mocking of the Democrats. Everything, by the way, is the Democrats. If it rains, it's probably the Democrat fault. If it's sun, well, that was the Republicans, whatever. And I'm honestly really tired of that. It's an old shtick. Lots of politicians have been doing it. The Democrats have their version of it too. I'm sick of that as well. But especially on an issue like this, I'm really aggravated about it because it's like Mike Johnson does on so many issues. He's not telling the truth. This is not the Democrats piling onto it. Many of the Democrats have gotten on back of it and they're going forth. But who's actually running this? Republican Thomas Massie. That is the driving force behind this. He and Ro Khanna, Democrat Ro Khanna, have been kind of in this together. But there is no doubt in anybody's mind that Thomas Massie has been the driving force behind it. He has stood up to all the pressure and everything else, everything everybody's been throwing at him. He's all on top of this, and he has been relentless about it. No matter what political pressure, release the Epstein files. He's been saying it forever. Even when Johnson tried to delay it by taking the House out of session early, toward the end of the summer, wouldn't seek Grijalva, who was going to be the 18th person on this, long after was necessary, using the shutdown as an excuse. Oh, well, we can't come into session. There was nothing about the shutdown that would have prevented that. All of those things Mike Johnson didn't talk about today. What a surprise there, because that wouldn't be fitting the motif of, well, you have to blame the Democrats. But then there's also the issue of why didn't the administration do this at first? You talk about why didn't the Democrats vote for this and why didn't they release it during the Biden administration? Okay, let's answer that question. Here's a bigger question that you didn't ask. The Republicans did clamor for it. I'm talking about President Trump in the campaign. Dikash Patel, Bondi, all these, many people constantly saying, release the Epstein files. We are going to release the Epstein files. They campaigned on it. So your side campaigned on it. So don't be now trying to talk about the Democrats and blaming them for any of this stuff. So the bigger question that also was not asked, since you campaigned on this stuff, how come, like on January, 21st, the day after inauguration, why wasn't the Epstein files released? How come when Pam Bondi made that big statement in front of Fox and got everybody all excited on the Republican side, why didn't the next day or maybe a week following that, why didn't they come out then? There's probably a good reason for that. And listen, you don't hide something if there's not something there you don't want out. I don't know what's on it. I'm just as eager as anybody else. But when you have the effort, the administration putting this much effort into doing everything conceivable to keep this file from coming out, and you're in your own base, there's something you don't want out. Because if you had nothing to hide, if this truly was just a Democratic hoax, like the president says ad nauseum, then you would have every incentive in the world to release it. You wouldn't wait for this vote. You wouldn't wait for this vote to go to the House of Representatives, and then assuming it passes today, which it probably will, to go to the Senate, wait for it to get passed, and then to come to the desk. You don't need any of that. You have the power to unilaterally do it right now. You could have done it on January the 21st of this year. You haven't done it. So that opens up a lot of questions. Why? What is going on? What is the reason? Now, Johnson bashed the Democrats for having nefarious motives. Well, the actual guy who did, Thomas Massie, laid out the motives today at a press conference also earlier this morning about what the genuine motives are.
I want to start by thanking the survivors. I mean, they're giving everybody hope in this country. There are survivors of other sex crimes in this country wondering if they should come forward. They're clouded with shame and concerned that law enforcement will do nothing. And these survivors have stepped forth, taking that same risk, worried that they will be defamed themselves. They have been defamed for stepping forward. But we're going to get justice for them. That's going to happen today in the People's House. The founders set up our government with three branches and two branches of Congress. And I don't think it's any coincidence that this fight is being started and it's being won in the House of Representatives. I have people, other survivors of other sex crimes, who come to me and say, thank you. You give me hope. You give us hope. There is hope here. We fought the president, the attorney general, the FBI director, the speaker of the House, and the vice president to get this win.
I mean, that alone is humiliating, that he had to, a Republican member of the House of Representatives, had to fight all of those people relentlessly to get just the files released so that there can be justice. And that was what motivates him above everything. He is not politically driven. He doesn't have an axe to grind anywhere that I'm aware of anyway. But what he has openly and publicly and relentlessly said, he wants justice for all those women who are standing behind him and those they represent as too. That's fair. That's what's motivated most American voters. Certainly most of the Republicans who were clamoring for this all along. That's why they want it, because they find these crimes abhorrent and they want justice for these people. Now, Mike Johnson did all kinds of stuff to delay this, and I just mentioned a bunch of them. Turns out he's not finished. In that same press conference today, turns out that just before that, he got on the phone with his buddy, the Senate Republican leader, and he got John Thune, and it looks like they're going to try some more delaying tactics.
So what am I to do as a leader in a situation like this? I call my counterpart in the Senate, Leader Thune, and I talked him through this with him and shared our deep concerns. And of course, they share those concerns as well. And so I'm very confident that when this moves forward in the process, if and when it is processed in the Senate, which there's no certainty that that will be, that they will take the time methodically to do what we have not been allowed to do in the House, to amend this discharge petition and to make sure that these protections are there. The authors of the discharge did not allow us to do that here. That's the rules here. But in the Senate, they can correct it. So under that circumstance, because of that, we know there's serious deficiencies. We know that the work of our colleagues in the Senate can address that and will.
So this sounds a little suspicious to me, because now that he's saying what he did, and long before this long screed that he said about how, oh, well, this discharge petition is just it's wrong. It's inadequate. It didn't have protections for the victims. There are thousands. He made sure that said that point. There are thousands of potential victims here that could be harmed. And they didn't go through methodically all of these files first to make sure no information is released that could harm anybody else. That's probably a fair issue, because he specified there some people don't want their information out there. Some people don't want to be mentioned in this. They shouldn't be. I agree with that. I think that that's right. Let's get that taken care of. But here's the issue, that now then you're talking about sending it to the Senate, where now instead of just voting on a release, now then you're saying, well, they're going to correct the situation that the discharge petition didn't, and they're going to go through. Folks, I'm telling you, this could be months. If they're allowed to do this, this could delay it for months. And they'll use all this shtick about, oh, we want to take care of people. You can get that. I tell you what, if you care about this, if that's actually your motivation, you would have already done it. So I'm not buying this at all. And don't you either. They could have been, knowing that this was coming, knowing that this did charge position, that they had the information, knowing that the voters want it out, you should have been going through this from the time you came into office. How is it that that's something that you campaigned on and that you now find so abhorrent and so important that you never took any action whatsoever to actually go through the files to protect the innocent? Because you didn't want the files out. And now then, suddenly you discover today there's all this stuff we have to worry about here. So that just shows you that a lot of the motivation is a little off here. Now, I want to go to real quick to one more person who also is the motivation, who was also put under a lot of pressure by the administration, the president in particular, and that's Marjorie Taylor Greene at that same press conference earlier today.
To the women standing behind me and all of the other survivors whose names you don't even know, but stand with these women, they are survivors, and they are strong, and they are courageous, and they are daughters of God. They are not victims. These women have fought the most horrific fight that no woman should have to fight, and they did it by banding together and never giving up. And that's what we did by fighting so hard against the most powerful people in the world, even the President of the United States, in order to make this vote happen today.
Listen, she's been pretty consistent about this as well. She has conviction. She's not worried about the politics. She's worried about the victims getting justice. So the same is with Thomas Massie. Now, you can say maybe those on the Democrat side had ulterior motives. Maybe they did. Maybe a lot of them did. Probably a lot of them did. Otherwise, they would have done something about it before. But those who have been pressing for it the hardest, they were convicted and convinced that they wanted justice for these people, which all of us should. And so that's the what the driver behind it is. Now, Marjorie Taylor Greene had one more thing to say. It wasn't just about the victims and about the vote that was coming up later the afternoon. She also mentioned President Trump there at the end. Well, she had a little bit more to say on that.
I was called a traitor by a man that I fought for six years for. And I gave him my loyalty for free. I won my first election without his endorsement, beating 8 men in a primary. And I've never owed him anything, but I fought for him for the policies and for America first. And he called me a traitor for standing with these women and refusing to take my name off the discharge petition. Let me tell you what a traitor is. A traitor is an American that serves foreign countries and themselves. A patriot is an American that serves the United States of America and Americans like the women standing behind me.
Oh, that is a stinger. And I want to bring on at this point Jim Webb, who we've had on our show before, who is a political and policy consultant, but also a very experienced in the political world. Jim, welcome to the show, first of all.
Dan, great to see you again. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here, and especially on this day where we're literally just any time now, they're going to start the vote on that. And we'll have to see where that ends up going here. But it's a pretty momentous issue. I mean, what do you think about where we are right now, given where we've been since January the 20th?
Oh, man. So I'd like to start with Marjorie Taylor Greene's comment. That was quite the zinger on President Trump. And I think she hit the nail on the head. She's been under a tremendous amount of pressure. And man, I never thought I would say this, but boy, is she consistent. On the issues and consistently right morally and in terms of America first. But where we've come, to sum it up very succinctly, the pressure on the Republicans and the president generally is coming to a head. It's like a tea kettle where, if you take a look at the petition itself, it was a bit of a struggle, relatively speaking, for Thomas Massie to find some unity inside the Republican Party to even bring this to the floor to get it discharged. But all indicators right now are that, like exactly what you said in the opening, where you're going to be hard pressed to find somebody who votes against this in the House, because by the nature of our elected representatives, for better or worse, things start to materialize, and they don't want to be left out. And nobody wants to be an individual who votes against this when it comes out, particularly when it looks like the administration is putting every ounce of firepower they have into knocking this down, which allows me to make a quote of Shakespeare. I love to do it when I have the opportunity, but man, my lady doth protest too much.
Right. That is a good, it's the second time on my show that Shakespeare has been quoted today. I never would have imagined that. But listen, she talks about there about how, what a true patriot is and somebody who wants this. For those who may not remember, you may have heard this. This is from September 2024 when Trump went on Lex Fridman to talk about the Epstein client list. Watch this.
List of clients that went to the island has not been made public.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? Probably will be, by the way.
So if you're able to, you'll be.
Yeah, I'd certainly take a look at it. Now, Kennedy's interesting because it's so many years ago. you know, they do that for danger too, because, you know, it endangers certain people, et cetera, et cetera. So Kennedy is very different from the Epstein thing. But yeah, I'd be inclined to do the Epstein. I'd have no problem with it.
I'd have no problem with it, says he. It seems like, though, when he actually got into office, that he seemed to have a little problem. What do you make of that? Because, I mean, let's look at that first, that clip by itself. He wasn't exactly a ringing endorsement. What did you make of it?
I mean, he said, you don't say anything publicly as a politician, endorse anything as a politician, say that you have no problem with anything as a politician, unless you mean it, because some, like, particularly on tape like that. So, you know, the die is cast with him. He has supported this. And you zoom out to his campaign, this was everywhere. This was Kash Patel. This was Donald Trump. This was Pam Bondi. This is everybody. And, you know, I'd like to go back to one little snippet of what Marjorie Taylor Greene said in terms of the Epstein files, where she zeroed in on what it means to be a traitor, to be in the service of another country. And there's a lot of emphasis on the, shall we say, the sexual aspect of these files, which I think is completely legitimate for any number of reasons. These people have been harmed. But who is or who was Jeffrey Epstein? DropSite has done a tremendous amount of excellent reporting, which for some reason hasn't metastasized into the greater mainstream media about who he was very cozy with. You know, and one thing that stood out to me is he was very friendly with Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel, to the point where that individual stayed at his house a tremendous amount in New York City. And that relationship was deep enough where he was trusted to go to Damascus to try and open a back channel with the Russians on the Syrian conflict to try and get what the Israeli government wanted. And it's not to say that Jeffrey Epstein was a specific and sole asset of, shall we say, Mossad or anything like that. But this guy has a tremendous amount of reach across governments and across international boundaries. So I think that quite possibly one of the key components of this that nobody wants to get left out or out in the open that would cross party lines is who he actually works with and what kind of relationships that it would damage. And it's a very legitimate question, and the American people deserve to know exactly who this guy was. And I think it's in these files. I hope it is. I mean, it's a
Gary was showing it there. We had our show a little while ago. Robert Barnes was making that same accusation. And y'all, by all means, Gary, if you could toss that into the description, the link to that for anybody who may want to see it, by all means, go and watch that, because that is a big question. And yeah, there hadn't been a lot of focus on that because of all the sexual issues here. Right. But I mean, let's just, all we can do is speculate because we haven't seen the files. But from what you have seen reported, to what extent do you think that might be the primary issue with Trump? A lot of people were suspecting that maybe the reason he didn't want to say anything is because he's in the files. I don't know. I don't have a clue. But what I'll tell you is, and you tell me if you agree or disagree, I have never seen Trump spooked by anything. I mean, when he was getting actually on trial, when he was convicted of felonies, any of the Access Hollywood tapes, all that kind of stuff. He was never spooked on anything. He was spooked on this. How do you see it?
I completely agree with you. If you look at his actions, they're nothing really short of manic across the whole arc of this. He's, you know, militantly for having them released. Then it's all of a sudden it's a hoax. And then he starts attacking people inside the Republican Party, his primary America firsters in Thomas Massey and Marjorie Taylor Greene, to the point where he called Marjorie Taylor Greene a traitor, which is absolutely wild. Shocking. And then within 24 hours, he flips. Oh, I don't care. You know, so it's it reminds me of an adage that my dad, you know, really drilled into me as a kid, right? Where bad news does not get better with age. It tends to fester like a rotten piece of cheese. His verbiage on that may have been a little more stern, a little more graphic. But I'll save your audience from that. But, you know, he's let this fester and hasn't confronted. He is scared.
Your dad used to be the Secretary of the Navy, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's correct.
So you can fill in the blanks there. Anyway, continue.
He was a rifle platoon commander in the Marine Corps before that, and that kind of set his, you know, set the tone for his entire personality and his vernacular, if you will. But yeah, I mean, he is absolutely petrified, and I would like personally to give him the benefit of the doubt on this. Say, okay, you know, maybe you aren't listed in there in some of the more nefarious acts, but at the same time, he has completely and willfully misconstrued his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. You don't turn up in pictures and in correspondence and all these different things. And then, as he said, I don't know the guy, or he's irrelevant. So we got to see what that actually entails. And quite frankly, if this is beyond the sexual acts and dips into, you know, international influence and international intelligence operations, that is way more damaging than anything else possibly could be.
Yeah. And then the question is going to be, will we get the files? I mean, let's look on. We don't have a whole lot of time here, but one of the things there that you heard from the Mike Johnson statement is that he talked to John Thune, the Republican leader in the Senate, earlier today. And he says, yeah, well, we're going to go through and fix all of these issues. That sounds like we're going to try and send this to the Senate, let it die a death of delay. What do you think about that?
I agree that is what they're attempting to do. However, what the reality is, you know, when this vote comes out today, when you have, yeah, here we go. It's going right now. We have 40 people not voting. All right. That is a mandate for this to appear on the calendar in the Senate. There is nothing they can do about this. There is going to be such a groundswell of pressure from the people. Remember, the legislators are sent there by the people to represent us. And that is, that kind of pressure is not going to go away because we are so close to having this out. The methodology by which they can use, basically what Thune can do is he can refuse to put it on the calendar, which takes away most of the procedural options from the Senate to bring it up for a vote. But I personally think that that would be absolutely foolish unless they're counting on some sort of distraction measure coming out of the executive branch. And you can look south of the Caribbean and our massed forces down there to see what that potentially could be in order to bury it. But I don't think this is going anywhere, Dan. They're going to have to put this on the calendar. They're going to have to vote on it.
Okay, so next question is, and this is on a lot of people's mind, will we get all of the files? If there are files that are incriminating, as some from Dropside and others, Robert Barnes may suspect, if they're there, can we count on the Justice Department or whoever the custodian of all these is they're actually going to give them out? How would we know if they didn't give them out or if they redacted so much that it couldn't be found?
Once again, this goes back to hopefully I think this is a litmus with the a litmus test for Congress at the hands of the American people, that if they chose to do that, to redact it to the point where they are absolutely meaningless, that there was no new information released, that there would be such an uproar within like across America that they would demand that the unredacted files be released. And the troubling thing to me is that there has been so much chaos. There has been so much, shall we say, less than forthright information coming out of the FBI. Take a look at the assassination attempt on Trump in Pennsylvania, in Florida, the rhetoric from Bongino and Patel about these files in particular and about Epstein's suicide, that if they do not act with the utmost amount of clarity and openness and provide the American people with just say, hey, you guys go take a look, that people are going to think the worst. And this could be something that very, very much ends the Republicans' chances in the midterms coming up because nobody's going to trust them anymore.
And so let's look at that in a second. But just in the last few minutes here, could you see a scenario to where whoever, President Trump and whoever is at the top of all this that has the concerns, that they may say, you know what, let people yell and scream. We're going to redact the heck out of this stuff. There's no way I'm going to let stuff out that's going to implicate me or that I knew something that I didn't tell anybody else, et cetera. And let everybody get upset. And then, man, the midterms are like a world away. I mean, it's a year away. 100 right. things are going to happen in between now and then. Do you see that as being a possibility?
I do. I come down ultimately on what we just talked about, that they are actually going to redact these. And this is what they've been doing. They've been trying to buy time to get the redactions in place before they are compelled by law to release them. I hate to think that, but I think that's where we are, Dan. And it's a little bit disheartening, but you know, I also wouldn't undercut the importance of the cumulative effect of how this administration has run its business in front of the American people, building up to the midterms in a couple years here, or basically a year. It has been very much below board. They have decided to do any number of things on their own without the input of the American people. And this could be, ironically, and maybe not even ironically, the most egregious of them all, because it was such a hot button during the election cycle.
And listen, I don't think the Epstein files had much to do with the blue wave that happened here a couple of weeks ago with the mayor in New York and the Virginia governor in New Jersey, et cetera. If that went as strong as it did, I can only imagine what may happen the next time. And in the event, and we don't really have time to go into all this right now, but in the event that we do get that blue wave just picks up into a tsunami heading into the midterms, you know, next year. I mean, man, if you think Trump's got trouble now, what's he going to do if he loses the House in a worst case scenario, maybe the Senate, probably not very likely. But with this, you never know where it could go, especially if the Senate does drag their feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's it all adds up. You know, it's an issue of trust with the American people. And it's an issue of, you know, Trump running as a quote unquote populist in the last two cycles. And, you know, the entire concept of a populist is that it is a ground up movement. The people at the base, your base, determine that this guy represents me and they send him to do their will. I mean, you can call it populism or you can just call it American democracy. It's, you know, interchangeable, right? And we have not had that. We had 4 years of Joe Biden jamming policies down the throats of Americans that were not popular, that they did not vote for, and in some cases on both sides of the aisle. We had the return of Donald Trump from exile, shall we say, who ran on this platform like, hey, I'm going to release the Epstein files because you want it. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z because you want it. I'm going to end the war in Ukraine in a day because that is what you want. You want us out. And none of that has happened. And this would be quite possibly the
worst of all.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for right now. We're a little bit out of time. We got another show here coming up with Patrick Henningsen in about 10 minutes. We're going to look some more at that very issue about the Russia-Ukraine war and where all that is in. But believe me, this issue is not going away anytime soon, and we will definitely have you back on very soon to continue this. And I'll be real interested in seeing what kind of reaction we have out of the White House, what are the kind of public statements come out as a result of this, and especially all eyes will then shift over to Brother John Thune and the U.S. Senate. So we'll see all that. He'll be on the hot seat for a while. I bet he won't like that.
I would hate to be that guy right now, Dan.
We would. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Jim. Really appreciate it. Appreciate you guys, too. And we are definitely going to stay on top of this for you. But we'll see you back in about 10 minutes on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.